This week on the Vigilant Sports Pacers podcast, I'm pleased to be joined by Quinn Buckner. You know him from Fox Sports Indiana's broadcast of Indiana Pacers basketball. It's a role he's had for 17 seasons. Buckner is also the vice president of communications at Pacers Sports and Entertainment and often represents the organization and speaks publicly. Buckner was also a terrific athlete. He grew up in Illinois and was an all-state football and basketball player. His basketball team won back-to-back high school titles his junior and senior seasons, where they only lost one game. He was then pushed by his father, William, to Indiana, where he played from 1973 to 1976. William played football at IU, and so would Quinn, although just for 2 years. He led the team in interceptions, and once the season was over, he immediately turned his attention to the basketball team under head coach Bob Knight. During his time with the IU basketball team, the Hoosiers went 108-12 and won every single Big Ten game his final two seasons. The 1976 championship team remains the last in the college game to record an undefeated season. This year in Bloomington, the IU Hoops team will wear patches celebrating the 40th anniversary of that team, which will be honored throughout the year. Then, Buckner went on to spend 10 years in the National Basketball Association. Buckner is just one of three individuals, along with Magic Johnson and Jerry Lucas, to have a championship at every single level, high school, college, professionally, and in the Olympics. It's a very busy but special weekend for Buckner, who had two Pacers broadcast and then he traveled to Kansas City, Missouri for Friday's induction. It just so worked out that the Pacers were off. Let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Hall of Famer Quinn Buckner.
Oh! Some smothered chicken on that one. Smothered chicken. Yum, Bahimi. Yum.
And going into the National Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame this weekend in Kansas City, Missouri, Quinn Buckner, you know him from Pacer broadcasts on Fox Sports Indiana, but he had an illustrious basketball career, even football. We'll talk about that with him here. He's on the road traveling right now, but taking time out of his day. Quinn, I appreciate you joining me.
No problem, Scott. How are you?
I'm very good. Appreciate that. Let's get right into it, because I know you are very busy. Going into the Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame here this weekend, before you land there and get started with friends and family, what do you expect this weekend to be like for you?
First of all, I'm humbled by the honor. I really am, because I never played with this even as any part of my what I was trying to get accomplished. But I expect it to be hectic, especially if you have family and friends, so you want to make sure that they have as an enjoyable time as possible, because it for everyone, it's a memorable moment. And as you move along this pendulum of life, it's about memorable moments, and this will be one of the most memorable moments I've ever had athletically.
Who do you expect to share in it with it? What kind of family, friends are you expecting to join you?
Well, all my family, I expect all my family to be there. The question you're probably asking in your own disguised way is whether Coach Knight's going to be there. I haven't talked to Coach Knight about, even when I was told about it, that's because that's not the way I operate. I'm not going to call Coach Knight and tell him that I got inducted and or ask him to come. That's something that he would choose on his own. And so I do not know who's coming. I do know that Rick Fuson from the Pacers Sports and Entertainment, Jim Morris is coming. I should say Rick coming. Jim Morris and Jackie Morris, who have been dear friends for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Benash and his wife Peggy, who he's happens to be the chairman of CNO, but we've become dear friends. I know they're coming. And both my assistant is coming, Melinda. So there are people from here that are coming. I have Matt, who's the ball boy with the Pacers, coming. So,
terrific.
Yeah, so it's really nice that these people are willing to share this moment.
Yeah, I wasn't getting to that first point, more of the latter of Pacer people, because it's become a family for you. I mean, after 17 years being on the broadcast, I mean, it's kind of your second family, am I right?
There's no question about it. I mean, when I got started getting, I was doing national television and radio, as you know, I got to a point that it became clear that I needed to do something that was a little bit different, in the sense that I wanted to be with people that I knew and trust. And not that the networks you can't trust, you just are not with them all the time. This was an opportunity to get with the Herb Simon and Pacers and Jim Morris, Rick, and Larry to do something with some people that I've known the majority of my life. I've known Jim Morris probably since I was in my early 20s. Rick Fuson and I actually played football together, so I've known him a very long time, and obviously I've known Larry a long time. So right there, you got a good nucleus. But in that is Donnie Walsh, who was my assistant coach my last year playing. basketball, and of all of those gentlemen, with all of those gentlemen and their wives, I've got great respect. Donnie I knew as a guy who coached basketball, but was a lawyer, and that was always intriguing to me because at one time I had an interest in trying to figure out if I was going to be able to do that. So you get these kind of people who support you and you share thoughts with, they share back, and they really mold and shape you. Even as an adult, you're still evolving personally, and all of these people have had an impact on my life.
I want to get into your playing career a little bit, but first with accomplishments. I know you're incredibly humble guy, so almost this weekend could be difficult for you, but you can celebrate those accomplishments. Where does it stack up? And also, I'm curious, where does the other big accomplishment stack up, being one of just three individuals to have a high school title, NCAA title, NBA championship, and gold medal?
Well, I'm again, Scott, I'm humbled. My intent in playing, while I was playing, was to try to make sure that whatever team I was on, I was helping that team get better. Mm-hmm. Not much different than being a part of the Pacer family now, just trying to make things better. And I think, and Jim Morrison has always said this, and I think many other people have said this, you always try to figure out something that's actually bigger than you. And for me, that's bigger than me. That's not about me. It's about what we're doing as a group. How do we do it successfully? Because the thing that I learned many years ago, my dad, who's been gone some 30 years, understand this very simply. If the team wins, everybody gets what's due to them. So that, to me, was a much more important part of what I was trying to get accomplished than anything else. And so this fact, winning the Olympic gold medal is from a pure playing standpoint, is obviously for me, mm-hmm. is one of the greatest things, because you represent your country and you're standing up there, they're playing a national anthem. It's really hard to get by that. And then you're talking about now ordering things, and I don't know if I can really order them, but this is huge in the sense that I've had more people come tell me about how huge it is than I honestly have taken it from just the way I deal with it. I deal with it. It's great. It's been a part of being on great teams and very, very well coached by Coach Knight, and understanding how to be successful in whatever venture you do. And I try to keep it in that perspective. That's mm-hmm. the only way I really know how to deal with it.
And the special thing about going into Hall of Fames and stuff like this is it's an easy excuse to look back at your career, and for folks like me that weren't alive back then can really understand what kind of player and impact you had at a university and organization and such. So let's get to that. You were an outstanding basketball and football player, all-state football and basketball in Illinois. Why did you ultimately end up at Indiana University playing both sports?
Well, there are a couple stories here. The first one is simply, in my neighborhood, which is only 3,000 people, most of the people played basketball. My dad had played football at Indiana on the team they just recently celebrated, which was one of the undefeated team in Indiana in the 40s. It's like 46, I believe, so a long time ago. But my dad knew I was an athlete before I could spell it. And I realized it in retrospect. I used to do no-hand flips when I was 9 and 10 years old over a little sidewalk. My dad really knew what that meant. I didn't. I was a kid having fun. And probably showing off to my father.
Oh, of course.
So he knew what that was about. Then, as part of this, my dad went to Indiana. And I was blessed enough to have the opportunity to go to any school in the country when I was coming going into college. What I didn't realize is my dad was taking me to see my sister, who's older than me. She's 4 years older than me. So we would go see her almost every year, maybe once or twice, something like that. I didn't realize my dad was recruiting me to Indiana. The essence of it was he was recruiting me to IU. I'd go see all of the places where he went to class. I saw the place. There was only one place he could stay. I saw that. I'd go around campus. A dear friend, Howard Brown, the late Howard Brown, who was a football coach at IU for many years and played with my father, was there, and my father was directing me to Indiana because, one, he said, quite frankly, go down and do what you need to do at Indiana, and those people in Indiana will be really good to you, and that has proven to be the case. He also had an interesting perspective that I had to think about. At the time, UCLA was the most prominent basketball school in the country, and dominant, not just prominent, it was dominant, and I had looked at going to UCLA, and I looked at Michigan, Kansas, and a couple others, but UCLA might have been the other school considered with Michigan. At any rate, he said, you can go to UCLA and win a championship and be one of many, but if you go to Indiana and you win one, you'll be one of few.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It resonated, and that that to me. So the combination of all of this was kind of a, let's just say, a funneling to Indiana. And the, if, at the end of it, it was strange. My letter of intent, I signed, I didn't sign in any particular time, but most of all, I procrastinated on the decision because it's hard. My dad walked in with a letter of intent, said, sign this, you're going to Indiana. So I signed it, gave it back to him. So that's how I got to IU, literally, because that's the way my house was.
Understandable. I got you. Did you play any other sports growing up?
I played baseball and played Little League, but I was a big kid. I mean, I was played Little League 1 year, and then the next year I was 12, but I don't know exactly how much I weighed, but they said that I was too big to play Little League, and I had to play Babe Ruth. And I didn't like baseball that much, and particularly a curveball. I wasn't overly interested and worried about a curveball. Not at Babe Ruth. I could deal with it in Little League, but I wasn't prepared to deal with it in Babe Ruth. And I ran track. My first sport actually was track. I was a long jumper at the time, and I ran sprints. But basketball is what the neighborhood guys played, and you play with your friends, and that's just what we play.
You were at IU 1973-76, played football a couple seasons, led the team in interceptions both, and then the final 2 years, more focused there on basketball. Someone was telling me a story here that I think probably been in your sophomore season. You were finishing up your terrific time with the football team, and then like not a week later, you started for the basketball team and just went right into the season. Is that accurate?
It actually happened my freshman year.
Freshman year. Yeah.
And Bob Hamill, the great writer for the Herald Times, HT Now, and Coach Knight are really close. So we played our last game our freshman year at Purdue, and I'm a mama's boy, admittedly. Loved my mother to death. And I was homesick, so we were in Lafayette, West Lafayette, and I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. So I'm figuring I'm 2 hours max to go home, and I was going to actually come back the game Saturday. I'm figuring I'm coming back Tuesday. Well, Bob Hamill comes to me after the game and gives me a great year, this, that. And Coach said he's expecting to see you at practice tomorrow. I'm like, what? And so, yeah, I went there. I went and practiced. And Bob Hamill told me a story recently about what happened with Coach Knight. That as it turned out, I came back and I was gifted. I'm not anymore. I was obviously gifted. I came back and I played well enough that Coach Knight had to call the late, great Coach Hank Iba, who was the Olympic coach and coaches one of his dear friends, and said, I just looked at my team and my best player, one of my best players, has been in practice for like 3 days, and I don't know whether I should start him or not because I've got guys that have been working the entire preseason. And Coach Iba, to his credit, said, calls him, I don't do this, but Coach Iba said, Bobby, you always put your best players on the floor. And that's how I ended up starting right away for Coach Knight. I didn't know that story, honestly, until about a month ago. I never had heard that, but that's what happened. So I'd come from football and gone into basketball. But mind you, I used to practice basketball even during the football season. If there was no snow on the ground with Bobby Wilkerson and Scott May outside of really McNutt, one of the dorms, there'd be a court on the side of the building. We'd go play over there. So I practiced basketball during football season.
Why ultimately do you think you chose basketball? Because you were terrific, obviously, at both.
I'm not crazy, Scott. Play basketball, you can play. You play football, you get your brain speed out.
Yeah, there's a lot right?
Yeah, so that was a big part of it. But as I said, a big part of it was I played it and I enjoyed it more. I enjoyed basketball more than football, though football was a easier sport for me. Everybody in my town that played it, and I guess there was some part of me that wanted to make sure that they understood that I could have some success at the thing that they thought was important, because I was also not overly bullied, but I was bullied because I was very dark. I was chubby as a kid. Mm-hmm. And took a little heat for that, and it was one of those things that I'm going to show you, and it's a Buckner trait. I get it. I come by it honestly. Mom and Pop both are, let's just say, very persistent is the best way I can put it.
That's fair. You were obviously part of an outstanding team, terrific team, both 75 and 76, talking about basketball. One, are you one of those that also believes 75, no doubt, the better team? And also, just how special is it, I guess, just to still be part of the last undefeated team in college basketball?
Well, I am one of those that believes that 75 was better. It was a deeper team, so it was a better team. There's no doubt. Scott getting hurt who was our best player on the team, makes, obviously makes a difference. And Kentucky, this is a big nothing for Kentucky. Kentucky won the game. They beat us. And that you just take and keep moving on. Listen, it is sometimes an out-of-body experience, all of this, for me. Because it was just never something that I was really striving to do. I was striving, first of all, to get a scholarship to go to college, and then to get it once I realized probably about my late junior, early senior year, I had an opportunity to go professionally, to play professional basketball, and in the interim, I get to go to the Olympics. It's like, this life is like, you would want it, but it's like, I didn't think of it in that context. I was still, again, just trying to be a, you know, a successful part of whatever venture I was involved in. And that, shut it. It is not any more difficult for that than me. I keep it really simple.
How much did you feel part of just a winning culture down in Bloomington?
Well, first of all, I had never seen Coach Knight coach, so I didn't know there was a winning culture.
Okay.
To be clear. Second of all, he'd only been there this was his second year. I'm part of the second class that Coach Knight had. He established with Steve Green and Laskowski and that group, John Campster, Doug Allen and those guys, what he was trying to do. But again, I had no idea how Coach Knight coached. I didn't really know. I knew who he was because he came and visited my house. And not only did he really got my mother. It was more my mother than my father on the basketball side. So the culture, I will say very humbly, probably got established with the class of his first class with Green and those guys. And with Scott May, Bobby Wilkerson, Tom Abernathy, Jimmy Cruz, we were able to be a part of the group that, if you will, perpetuated the way things were to be done for Coach Knight.
Why did you wear number 21?
Because I couldn't get number 25. I wore 25 in high school, and I don't recall who had it, but I got there. And I'm not sure if they played or not, but I also think Coach Knight was really establishing his role as the leader of the organization, and he wasn't going to ask anybody to give it to me. And I perfectly understand that from a leadership standpoint because, one, I'm a freshman, and, two, that at some point that may alienate some people if you start taking the jersey from a guy who's been there, spent time, and give it to a freshman. I get all of that. So that's why I wore 21.
You then went on and were drafted by the Bucks in 1976, seventh overall, but you were also drafted by the Redskins in the 14th round there in the NFL-wise, but went on to play 10 NBA seasons. I got to believe it's just such a drastic, different experience from the NBA back then and today. What couple things that stand out to you about the differences, whether it's travel or obviously money's a big one as well, right?
Well, that's a good start. It's just, it's different. I mean, and thank goodness it's different, because I think if you kept watching the same thing, people would get bored. I think they get used to it, but at some point they get bored. The game is faster. Even in the last 5 years, I think the Pacers have shown that's something that you've got to look at. Young men, the players are more athletic, in a lot of ways more skilled. Because of the way some of them have learned the game, they may not be as learn it about the craft, and it takes them a little longer from that standpoint. But I think it's a beautiful game. I think it flows better. And I remember having, when I was working with NBC at the time, Phil Jackson often made note of the fact that he thought the game was it was too physical. When I got in the league, it was physical, and for me, that was the best way for the league to be for me personally. That's just one person in the group, because I was a physical player and I'm a former football player. So if I'm on the floor and there's a loose ball that I go after, there's not much chance you can get the ball with this thought in mind. I'm a football player. You can't hurt me like I've been hurt on a football field, so I'll run through you to get it. And I always felt like it was my ball if it was free. That was more of the mentality then. Now it's a more of a finesse game, and I think that's fine for the sport. I think you bring in the international community, and you've got something that's pretty special. So I like where it is. I love where it was. Like where it is, the money aside, these young men work hard, and even the ladies, they work hard. They deserve to get it. But basketball has changed, and I think for the better.
Defense was a big thing for you, defensive back, on the football field and then on the court. Where did that hard-nosed mentality come from?
And playing football, I had my high school football coach had a saying on the wall. I'll never forget it. He said, if you score, you may win. If they don't score, you won't lose. And that stuck with me. It's just weird, the things that resonate. Now, in basketball, that is, you know, virtually impossible. You know, it's impossible for all practical purposes that they don't score. But the better you are at it, it makes it that much more difficult for people to score. And most guys have their most fun when they play offense. And so if you take away their joy, then they're probably going to be less effective on the defensive end, which allows your offense to be more effective. It's kind of a counterintuitive thought process that was that I acquired. I just acquired it, but that was the way. And when you watch guys, that's simply the way it is. Now, you know, Pacers have a unique guy in Paul George who enjoys playing defense but can flat-out score. That's what you start to see as you move along and see Jordan and some of these other guys. And I'm sure the guys, I don't mean, you know, Oscar and all those other guys, because they did that too. But that's really the premise that I started with. If they don't score, you won't lose. And that was way I saw it.
Now, a lot of people don't see you beyond Fox Sports Indiana, obviously, as the color analyst with Chris Denieri on Fox Sports Indiana, currently in your 17th year. But I see a lot of it, and I know people have shared stories of it a lot, too. And there's a lot of times where you talk to guys and you kind of play in a mentor role. And I got to believe more of that is life lessons and how to carry themselves as a pro, especially as you get younger players today. Miles Turner is just 19. Is that also a role you like with the Pacers?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I come by that honestly. My parents were, everybody in my family is in education, and which by virtue of that, it's always reaching out and sharing. And so I come by that honestly by them, and I do it because that's what I grew up with, one. But two, I know the trials and tribulations. I've been blessed to be in this sport since I was very young, since I was a kid, you know, less than 10. And I've seen enough things that I think I can help them. Now, you always have to realize that it is a function of the listener as well, but the ability to be able to share with them, and over a period of time, not only me, but if somebody else keeps giving them similar kind of conversation, they come out better for it. And particularly with the league, you talked about Miles Turner, who's a terrific young man, but he's 19 years old. So life is well in front of him and many things that he has to deal with, and you just kind of lay those out for him. Some he will hear and act on, some he won't act on right away, somebody, many things that other people will tell him. And you keep hearing it, just like you as a child, Scott. Your parents keep telling you the same thing about whatever it is. And you hear it, but you don't do what you need to do with it. Somebody else says something, you're like, oh, that's what they were talking about. If you can impart, and me personally, if I can impart something that the young people that will react to at some point, so they're aware of it and then will react to it in their lives, hopefully it helps them just have a better life. That's what I'm interested in. It's nothing more than that. I'm just trying to share what information I've gathered over these years and let them take it and run with it. And they're grown. Let them make decisions because that's how they learn.
Everywhere you've been, you've been a winner. You're a flat-out winner. How did you instill that within yourself and work to get that within the culture of a team and an organization?
I am the proud son of William and Jessica Buckner, and I come by it honestly. That's the way they were. I don't know any other way, Scott. I really don't.
It's just always who you have been.
It's who I've become having been around my parents and them always trying to make a situation better. And I think by example, when you do it and you share, as you were asking me a moment ago about sharing information, if you do it, people tend to do what they see, not necessarily what they hear. So the combination of saying and doing, and people hopefully pick up that, you know, as a rule, I mean, I'm not a saint. You know, obviously, I'm the center like everybody else in the world. But I'm trying to do the best with the circumstances and try to make the circumstances even better than they were before I got to that place. That's really the, again, this is not hard for me. I keep it really simple.
You have to do that sometimes. It can get complicated and overwhelming. Keep it simple, and you're successful. Got to ask you about the Pacers of today right now. They lost their first three games, but have since won 7 of 9 games, the two losses by the top two teams in the East, Cleveland and Chicago. Are you starting to get a feel for this team and what they might be able to become here, not only short-term, but in the next few years?
I always like that, and I got this is Donnie Washington, so as you get older, you learn. I like to get in 20 games before I get to that point.
Okay.
It's better. What I do see is a team is figured out what it needs to be, and it's better on the defensive end, because I don't think there's any question when Larry and Donnie and Kevin Pritchard and Peter Dinwiddie put the team together, you knew the team had offensive weapons, and what you're unsure of is whether or not guys would defend. Well, guys have defended, and that's really creeping in as a bit of the staple. And I think that's really going to help in the long run, because one of the great coaches that used to coach in Coach Brady's team that probably played, Coach Pete Newell, who's long been gone, and coached the 60 Olympic team, said, you're not really a team until you become a really good team, until you become good defensively, because that's when you really have to tie five people together. And more in the game, I see that with this team. I do have to applaud this. I think Frank has done a terrific job here early. And Paul's ability to be part of a greater good kind of concept, where he's really trying to do what he did when he left and ensure that everybody on the team is successful, has really, I think, somewhat, I would say, that expedited, but has been a big part of why the team was able to get turned around. But there's still some feeling out to do. Monte Ellis, terrific offensive player. He's got to, you know, it's figuring out more and more how his value is to the team. That's important. C.J. Miles is off to a good start. So you got guys off to a good start offensively, but you got to be very solid defensively, and that's really been what's made this team pretty good. I mean, you go into Chicago without two of your players, and you got them to a possession game with a chance to win it. Given that you have changed your concept, the concept, coaching staff has to learn new schemes, new players, that says that you're doing some things right, and I think that's where you get some real buy-in from the players, and it was encouraging last night at Philadelphia how they did not take that for granted, and I thought they did a terrific job with a team that hasn't won a game. So I see good signs, but you don't know what the team is going to be until you're quarter way through the season.
Last thing, as I know many fans are wanting to know, is that Twitter account real? And if so, how often do you use it?
It is me. It's me. I'm not, how often? I follow people mostly because I'm a really curious person. So I like following different things. A lot of it is in business. I do follow basketball, but I follow in business. And, you know, when people are gracious enough to give us a compliment, I tend to try to react to those. But I'm not on it every day, and clearly that means I'm not on it every 20 minutes or 15 minutes like some other people. But that's,
you know, you're calling me out. I get it.
No. I'm just saying that's the way the world is, and I actually like it. I mean, what it's really done. You know, this is very simple. It's provided people who've always wanted to say something a voice, and that's fine because everybody has an opinion and see things differently based upon their perspective, and that's not bad because you can learn from other people's perspective, and you know, it may impact you, it may not, but I think that's okay.
Well, Quinn, you're headed into the Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame. That will be a fun experience, a special experience, and you're a terrific broadcaster. There's no doubt about that, and if they didn't already, I think Pacer fans got a clear indication of what they have in the Pacers broadcast team on Fox Sports Indiana during the preseason. That's where many recognize how fortunate they are to have you, Chris Denieri, and Jeremiah Johnson for all 82 games this season. And you and CD, you guys have been together for 10 years and counting. I want you to have a great week and enjoy it. I think it'll be very special for you guys. And be sure to give us some smothered chickens this year, all right?
When I see them, I'll give them to you. Thanks.
All right, Quinn. Once again, thanks so much to QB for joining me on this week's podcast. My shout out this week goes to Rodney Stuckey and his wife Heidi for taking over David and Leslie West as hosts of the Pacers Come to Our House Thanksgiving Dinner for over 700 men, women, and children from Central Indiana. They will receive a warm, traditional holiday meal on Friday. For continued Pacers coverage, check out my site, VigilantSports.com. Also, follow me on Twitter, @ScottAgnes, on Facebook at Facebook.com/VigilantSports. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the Vigilant Sports Pacers podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and now Stitcher. I plan to do some giveaways as well on future podcasts. This has been the Vigilant Sports Pacers podcast, this week featuring Quinn Buckner.